What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Russia warns it could send troops to Cuba and Venezuela, ramping up tensions with the U.S. Plus, President Biden names his pick to regulate America's banks, a move that could shape how the financial industry addresses climate change. And China's pandemic response threatens to slow its economy and the world's.
This zero COVID policy has significantly hurt consumption and the service sector.
It's Friday, January 14th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia is threatening a military deployment to Cuba and Venezuela, ramping up pressure on Washington amid stalled diplomatic talks over Ukraine. The U.S., NATO, and Russian officials met this week in an attempt to tamp down tensions surrounding the buildup of Russian troops at the Ukrainian border. Russia has called for a halt to NATO expansion in Eastern Europe, but Western officials have rejected that demand. Last night, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan dismissed the threat of Russian deployments in the Western Hemisphere.
I'm not going to respond to bluster in the public commentary. If Russia were to move in that direction, we would deal with it decisively.
At the same time, the Journal has learned that Russia has been moving more weaponry, including tanks and rocket launchers, westward from bases in its Far East. The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th attack on the Capitol has issued subpoenas to four social media companies. Google parent Alphabet, Facebook owner Meta, as well as Reddit and Twitter have all been asked to provide records related to the spread of misinformation, as well as efforts to overturn the 2020 election, foreign interference in that vote, and domestic violent extremism. The panel called the company's response to prior requests for information inadequate. Alphabet and Meta said they have been cooperating with the committee. Reddit said it would continue to work with the panel on its requests. Twitter declined to comment. Elon Musk says Tesla is accepting Dogecoin as payment for some of its merchandise. The tweet from the Tesla CEO signals a return to accepting digital currencies after Musk last year expressed concerns about high levels of fossil fuel use for Bitcoin mining. Tesla's website now shows some items, including one labeled a Giga Texas belt buckle priced in Dogecoin. The crypto surged more than 10% following Musk's tweet. And Australia has canceled tennis star Novak Djokovic's visa for a second time. Immigration Minister Alex Hawke said authorities were committed to protecting Australia's borders, especially in relation to the COVID-19 pandemic. In response, an Australian judge has held an emergency hearing today, with a decision on Djokovic's potential deportation expected on Sunday. Our reporter in Sydney, Stuart Condy, says the latest twist in Djokovic's saga comes just days before the tennis star was due to take the court.
The Australian Open, in which Novak Djokovic is top seed, starts on Monday. The draw has already been made. So at this stage, we really don't know if Novak Djokovic will opt to leave the country quietly or pursue this further.
Tennis Australia, the governing body for the sport in the country, didn't immediately comment on the matter. President Biden has nominated Sarah Bloom Raskin as the Federal Reserve's next top banking regulator. It means Raskin could become the government's most influential overseer of the U.S. banking system. And her nomination suggests the Biden administration is hoping to see a greater focus on the risks posed by climate change to the financial industry. Here to break down the significance of Raskin's nomination is markets reporter Ben Dummett. Hi, Ben.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
What do we need to know about Sarah Bloom Raskin?
She's a former Fed governor. She's likely to appeal to progressive Democrats in the Senate because she's known for her advocacy of greater financial regulation. She was deeply involved behind the scenes in the writing of the rules to implement Dodd-Frank regulatory overhaul. And she has previously said that she blamed the financial crisis on a combination of greed, weak regulation, and weak enforcement.
What kind of tasks is she likely to be overseeing if she's confirmed for this role?
Well, as the most influential overseer of the U.S. banking system, she's going to be mandated to ensure that banking lending activity in essence, doesn't put the financial system at risk. More specifically, she'll be looking at areas like crypto, which has become the forefront of the market these days, and it's exposed a lot of risk that investors can face. And as a result, that'll be a real priority for her to ensure that investors aren't taken advantage of.
Climate change is not a topic we typically associate with the Fed's work, but Raskin apparently sees that differently. How so?
Yeah, she wants the Fed to take a more active role in addressing financial risks posed by climate change. She's on record in 2020 is saying that the Fed and the Treasury should have prevented lending to oil and gas companies in favor of supporting more innovative industries.
Yeah, that belief certainly lines up with how President Biden hopes to see this Federal Reserve role change in the future. But are Raskin's positions nonetheless likely to complicate her confirmation process?
Yeah, it is. The Senate is closely divided between Republicans and Democrats, and some Republican senators have already come out and take an issue with some of the comments that she said regarding the oil and gas industry.
That was Markets reporter Ben Dummett. Ben, thank you.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Coming up, China's strict COVID zero policy has prevented mass outbreaks and allowed China's economy to keep buzzing. But Omicron is testing that strategy in ways that could rattle global supply chains. We've got more on that after the break.
You're a growing business and you can't afford to slow down. If anything, you could probably use a few more hours in the day. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
China's economy is giving off startling new warning signs. Factories are closing, ports are backing up, and workers are stuck at home amid new lockdowns. Just today, China also banned flights from the U.S. and other countries in a bid to stem the spread of COVID-19. For much of the pandemic, China looked like it had a handle on the outbreak, but now that tough stance on the virus could be causing economic risks, not just for China, but for the whole world. Lingling Wei is the Journal's chief China correspondent, and she joins us with the story. Hi, Lingling.
Thank you.
Could you walk us through some of these worrisome economic signals that are starting to come out of China now?
Sure. It's pretty amazing how much people's expectations for China's growth have changed just in recent months. Now we're witnessing a sharp slowdown in economic activities, especially last quarter. It looks like the growth last year would be at best around 8%, and even more challenging for this year. So part of the slowdown we're witnessing really stems from China's own policy on the internet tech economy, private tech firms, or private business overall. And that kind of policy action really dampened business and consumer spending. Then we are seeing the continued implementation of this zero COVID policy, which has resulted in more frequent lockdowns and travel restrictions, and significantly hurt consumption and the service sector. So overall, in the words of Chinese officials themselves, China's economy is really faced with significant challenges summed up as demand contraction, supply shock, and weakening expectations.
Could you just zero in on what we're beginning to see at China's ports, at some of its factories right now, as the world tries to discern how Chinese economic activity may be slowing right now?
So, very good reporting by my colleagues early this week showed that the latest round of COVID-19 outbreaks really are affecting a lot of cities and ports in China. We are seeing backlogs really piling up in the containing port of Ningbo and Zhoushan, which is really close to the very cosmopolitan and economic developed city of Shanghai. And we're seeing the very draconian measures Chinese authorities have taken to counter the outbreaks in several Chinese cities. You know, all those restrictions have had the impact of forcing factories to shut down and the piling up of backlogs at ports and other transportation hubs.
And Lingling, what do these backlogs in China mean for the global supply chain?
Already, you know, we're seeing multinational firms like Samsung, Volkswagen in Germany, and U.S. companies like Nike and Adidas are suffering production hitches because their suppliers in China are being forced to shut down.
And as you've explained, these disruptions are being caused by a strict zero COVID policy, which has China locking down entire cities if even just one COVID case is detected. But with China not seeing that many new infections, why are they sticking with this policy?
It's really interesting. Part of the problems we're seeing now really is a curse of China's own success, especially early on. Precisely because they have been implementing such strict lockdown requirements and other travel restrictions, the natural immunity level in China has remained very low. And another factor is that Chinese vaccines are proven to be less effective than the Pfizer-Moderna vaccines, largely because Chinese vaccines use inactivated virus. And the Chinese authorities are also very slow in terms of approving Western-produced vaccines.
Given all of this, Lingling, is there any chance China might abandon this COVID-zero target?
The chance of China changing the strategy is very low. The leadership under Xi Jinping has made it very clear that this zero COVID approach is essential for maintaining the kind of social stability, political stability in China. And 2022 also is very politically important year for the Chinese leadership, because later this year, they're going to hold once in every 5-year kind of party congress, whereby President Xi is expected to continue his rule for many years to come. So it's a very politically significant year. So the emphasis on stability, social, economic, and political stability is greater than ever. And from Xi's point of view, the top leadership's point of view, the zero COVID strategy really works despite the economic risk, the economic costs we just talked about. From the grassroots level, Chinese public also has come to really count on the government to keep them safe. China, after all, is still a very developing country, and the investment in healthcare facilities across the country, especially in rural areas, it's just really still very weak. They don't want to risk hospitals getting overwhelmed and potentially people taking the street if cases are getting out of control.
Lingling Wei is the Journal's chief China correspondent. Thanks so much for bringing us this story.
Sure, thank you.
And finally, you may think there's just one way of selling your home by listing it with a realtor on the open market. But for anyone uneasy about the idea of strangers shuffling through their house, a different way of selling is gaining popularity. The Journal's Jumbo Jungle columnist Robin Friedman explains why sellers are increasingly turning to private sales.
Private sales are common with high net worth individuals and celebrities who don't want their home and photos of their home appearing all over the internet. The second is through a reduced commission. If there's only one agent involved in the transaction, that agent might agree to reduce his or her commission. And the third way a private transaction is beneficial to a seller is that it might be quicker and easier than a publicly listed one.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.
What? What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.